concern.
Thank you, Pierce.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. On page 8 of your presentation, page 9 of your presentation, you've got a summary of the SASE results, and you highlight a very important thing, and that is, in the first bullet, features associated with gravel, and then it's defined, granular pebble, cobble, and boulder, okay? These are the habitats, the gravel habitats estimated to have higher vulnerability. So I see that, and then I go to the figure on page 6 to see where the gravel is located, and I note that the granular pebbles are dispersed far and wide. It's hard to tell in this particular figure because it's so small. But my question is, will there be provided to this council convincing information that we really do need to enact habitat protection areas, measures to protect habitat in locations where there are granular pebbles, which are very small? I don't believe they're capable of, well, they're not boulders and they're not cobbles with 3D life. It's a high energy environment where things get swept away, such as the sand, leaving behind the granules and the pebbles. So to me, that's going to be critical for this council to review as we get deeper into this very important work and then make decisions about what areas should be considered for special protection. So I would, this is just an advance warning, as I warned you maybe 3 years ago, please provide that information so I can be convinced that those areas warrant protection. The other areas, absolutely, but I need help with the convincing. Thank you.
Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know, Michelle, you look sort of ready to respond to that. Did you want an opportunity to do that, or are you ready for another question? Okay. So some of these management alternatives include ground cable length limits, and you highlighted the fact that obviously given a shorter ground cable, you have sort of a less area, less impact. Is there any reason to think that the same wouldn't be true for a scallop dredge, in terms of a broader, wider scallop dredge would have significantly more impacts than a narrower one in the same way?
No, I mean, it's the same sort of basic concept, that narrower gear is going to have less of an impact, provided that your catch and your toe length is constant. So that kind of makes sense. So the outputs in SASE looks separately at general category scallop gear and limited access scallop gear, and to my understanding, the limited access gear is fairly uniform in terms of the dredge width that's used, and then the smaller dredges are used with the smaller vessels. So in terms of sort of estimating past impacts and then forecasting future impacts, we're going to be looking at sort of the actual width of gears that are used in the fishery on different vessels and making those projections accounting for different gear widths. I don't know if that totally answers your question, but
I guess it does in part that those differences are expected to be based at least in part on the width of the gear. But in terms of management alternatives, at least what we've considered to date, while the analysis separates out general category or smaller dredge operations from larger dredge operations, the management measures allow for considering those impacts or considering the sort of consequences of those differential habitat impacts once we get to deciding what management measures we ultimately want? Or is that simply for mobile groundfish gear or dragger gear?
I mean, the committee hasn't discussed the idea of sort of, I mean, the idea behind the ground cable modification options would be to encourage people, if they're going to fish in areas that are thought to be more vulnerable, that they'd use gear that's narrower, has less of a footprint on the seabed, and assuming catchability remains constant, that you're going to have an overall reduction in the magnitude of gear impact on the bottom. The committee hasn't discussed the idea of sort of encouraging modifications to scallop dredge gear, but when if an area is designated as a ground cable modification area, then there would be no management of what was envisioned, is there would be no management of scallop dredging in the area. So there are narrower gear by much narrower than trawl gears to begin with. So those would be just excluded from that type of a regime.
I have Laura Ramson and then John Bullard.
I just wanted to echo what Dr. Pierce said. As the same exact thing struck me, is that there's a large difference between granular pebble, which I think of as one step above sand, versus cobble and boulder, which, frankly, the fishermen don't want to run their nets over. So I would definitely be looking for some explanation, because I think we need to be careful of the difference of nice to close versus must close, especially given the current environment. And I had one other. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say is, obviously, thank you very much for this report. I would echo comments earlier saying that you certainly synthesized a great deal of information. And it makes me quite hopeful about how much analysis has already been done, that it might be helpful for the service as they're evaluating whether to let the scallopers into the areas or the groundfish, that all of your legwork will certainly be helpful in those efforts. Thank you.
Quickly, I think what's hard to see on any of these figures, and it's something that will come out in the individual area characterizations, is that the areas that have been identified really do have a mix, for the most part, of, well, as far as I know, all of them do, of boulder and cobble substrates, kind of in a wider matrix of granular pebble and sand. And what we'll try and do in the impacts analysis is indicate, you know, what the proportions are of those different substrates, and you know, any uncertainty we have in those outputs and that kind of thing. But all these areas do, to my knowledge, incorporate some elements of cobble and boulder. So I don't think there are any areas that have been identified that really just focus on the really smaller gravels.
John Bullard.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you very much for the explanation of the work and the outline of goals and objectives. It is a daunting task. And to pick up on a metaphor that Drew Mankiewicz mentioned about the man on the moon, I guess in part my questions are going to be a little bit, you know, when does the man on the moon land? But also, you know, I think part of the metaphor is that when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, we didn't stop, you know, shooting rockets off into space. That was just an interim step. And so I want to get back to this sense of urgency. And that is, we don't have to have all of the information before we vote on a plan. We don't have to have all of the information before we see a plan that delineates essential fish habitat. You have a lot of information assembled. Now, before I took this job, I worked with Matt and others at Sea Education Association. I worked with John Weber, who addressed us yesterday or the day before on the Mass Ocean Plan. And State Representative John Quinn and other colleagues said we should have a Mass Ocean Plan somewhat similar to this. And he gave us 1 year to develop a Mass Ocean Plan for Massachusetts state waters, with the same daunting list of challenges, and said to John Weber and Darren Babbrot, you've got 1 year, deliver it, 1 year. And so we delivered it, 1 year. Now, that wasn't the end of our work. The work still goes on, and John Weber reported. Now it's an even more daunting task because it's federal water. Right, the work goes on, but at the end of 1 year, there was enough done so that lines could be drawn about, you know, special protected areas and where renewable energy should be done. But a deadline was done, 1 year, and so there's a lot of work that we have to do. There's a lot of work we have to do. And I would think that you have a lot of information that you've gathered in the time you've done, so that boundaries are there. And I'm going to ask one of the great boomerang questions, because I know this one's coming right back at my head, and I'm going to duck, and it's going to hit Dr. Karp right behind me, which is, you know, when are we going to see, it's a two-part question, the second part is the boomerang, and I'm ducking, and it's going to hit Dr. Karp right behind me. When are we going to see a plan that we can vote on that establishes essential fish habitat? And what resources does the council need to speed this along so that we can vote on the omnibus habitat amendment as soon as possible, so that we can get on to opening mortality closure areas, so that we can get on to seeing how we can open up the northern edge so that scallopers can get to areas with minimal yellowtail closure, so we can do this, because it all rests on this amendment. What can we do to speed this process along? And now I'm ducking.
Okay, first of all, the SASE model and the process that we're engaged upon right now, I'm going to take these one at a time. You're quite right, it's an interim thing. It's an interim by the legal standards. It's an interim process, because every 5 years it has to be updated. As far as Drew's Man in the Moon is concerned, the analogy fails in one regard, and that is that that John Kennedy had the resources of the most powerful government in the world, and he had major agencies that were involved. To be honest with you, and to lay it right out frankly, I've been trying for 5 years to get help from Michelle. And I've been all the way to the top of this agency to do so. And this is no indictment of Paul or anybody here, because he's done the best he could. But we have been trying for 5 years to get additional resources on this. And as far as the amendment itself is concerned, we're ready to go. The reason that we have the ground fish involvement is because, as a practical political matter, if we had come in to close new areas, we would be opening others, but those areas were already ground fish closures. So if I go to a fisherman and I say to him, well, yeah, we want this little area over here to close, and we're going to open this one over here, then he looks at it and says, well, okay, you opened it, but it's still closed. I still can't fish there. So what the fisherman sees is more habitat, more ground taken away. So it became necessary to get the ground fish involvement. Now we need the ground fish analysis and you know, if you look at the larger options and alternatives that we've got set up here for fishing on EFH, we're pretty much ready to go here. Once we get the ground fish analysis, this can all be put into options that get come right before the council and out the door. That's what we need right now. But the idea that that this was done over a 7-year period with poor little Michelle doing, you look at what she's turned out. Just take, you know, the stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff that's been turned out. And the SASE model, we weren't going to get into that today, and I didn't want to get into it very far. But when you look at the capability of that model, the first time that was run on a computer at Woods Hole, it was run at night because it shut down all the other computers. It took that much computer power. So these things have gone a long way with the resources we had at hand. Frankly, I've wanted to have this finished up for the last 4 years. And, you know, we don't have the resources that John Kennedy had to put a man on the moon. And I agree with you, it's an interim thing. As soon as we finish this and get it out the door, we finish the corals, and sometime over the next 5 years, we've got to renew this process. SASE is it grows by itself if you keep adding data. The only major thing we have left to do right now, and it's not even that major thing because it's mostly done, is to research areas. And that actually, not so much research areas, they've been characterized by some people as playgrounds for scientists. They're not that at all. What we need to establish, and what's required in the law that we establish, is research areas that are for monitoring the effects of what we do. We can't be putting this kind of an amendment out to protect habitat with no metric for to know 5 years from now whether it worked or not. This is what this is the trap we got caught in. This is why we've got areas closed, like Nantucket Lightship area, closed area one for habitat, that have no value at all. In fact, may have been counterproductive, because what they did was they moved effort into other areas. So you had displacement of effort and a completely distorted situation. Now we've got the metric to take to do those measurements, but it has to, as you pointed out, it has to keep going and going and going. And we have the waypoints where we have to stop and say, here's where we make the decisions. We're there now, but we just need we need that last push with the input from primarily from the groundfish side of it. And all of these people have been completely occupied. But I sure would have liked to have had some help from Michelle 4 years ago.
John, did that answer all your questions?
Yes.
Okay. I see some hands down there. Mary Beth?
I just wanted to remind the chairman that I do have a motion from the Groundfish Committee that's pertinent to this discussion. And I also have, and I can make that motion on behalf of the committee. I also have given Karen another motion that would be just a motion from me that would answer John's question, maybe.
Okay, I'm going to take comments from Matt and Tom and then and Chairman Robbins, and we're going to move on to the motions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Bowen, I appreciate the call for urgency. Time is short. We need to act. But I've been hearing from industry for the very short time I've been on this council that the mortality closures were done without enough thinking. And as Dr. Preble has just said, they may have been misplaced. So, sorry, congratulations on the promotion. So I think we need to move quickly, but we need to think. We have a lot of information that needs to be considered properly. We need to consider how these areas will protect essential fish habitat as laid out in the law. And we need to move fast, prioritize this, yes, but we can't just jump because we need to jump right now, because we're trying to correct that from 15 years ago. The industry needs predictability and planning. We owe it to them. Thank you.
Tom Dempsey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this quick, and I definitely want to say that I appreciate John's question, and I think I'll take the opportunity to broaden it out a little bit. As a true partner with the council, I think the service has an opportunity to help us in a time where we have a real backlog, things that we need to deal with. I think we talked quite recently on the legal side of things of moving some folks around and putting some more resources in to clear a backlog. I think you could do that here. I mean, we're about to have a priorities discussion, and Paul, every time anybody brings something up, as is his role, is going to tell us all that there's no staff to do it, and we have actions backing up on top of each other. Now, we have a staff. I don't know how big the staff is, but it's a tiny percentage of what's at the regional office and certainly what's at the disposal of at the easy beck and call of the agency. So send 3, 4, 5 people, help us for a year and a half, clear the backlog of these FMPs, and we'll move forward. Right now, things are just backing up in the queue, and habitat is clearly first and foremost among them. We can all agree that we need to move forward on it, but there's other things that we need to do in some of these FMPs that have been sitting around for quite a while. Inbox a targeted effort, which are, I think, a great partnership and would help us clear some of this backlog. And I'll talk your ear off about that if you're open to the suggestion.